Blog Talk Radio.
Shalom. Welcome to another edition of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio and Podcast. This is your host, Rabbi Richard Address. It gives me great pleasure to welcome you back to our shows, which is our desire to explore issues and events that help shape and comment on the current revolution in longevity and how that revolution is impacting our families, ourselves, and our Jewish world at large. And we invite you to share comments as usual and ideas with us at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com or on the Jewish Sacred Aging Radio Facebook page. And it is with great pleasure we welcome to the microphone for our first segment on today's show, Michael Schimmel, the founder and CEO of Shiva.com. Michael, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Hi. How you doing? How you doing today?
Doing very well.
Good, good. Michael's talking to us from beautiful Miami, where hopefully the sun is shining and it's a little bit warmer than what it is here in New Jersey today, in southern New Jersey. But anyway, Michael, Shiva.com, you founded this. You're the CEO of Shiva.com, the website, resource center. Exactly what is Shiva.com?
Shiva.com was created to be the ultimate resource for Shiva and Jewish mourning, to help people learn, plan, and send and understand what to do, how to act, and the traditions and customs surrounding Shiva, Jewish mourning, certain planning of the events that take place, and help people be prepared, as well as those that may or may not be familiar with how to act, with what to send. So we do everything from an educational resource on learning, all about the traditions, customs, from a trans-denominational approach, and focus on the educational and guidance side as a real key component, because many people are unfamiliar with what to do as they've never really encountered this event.
So you're the founder. My sense is that there's probably a story behind this, unless you just woke up one day and say, gee, this sounds like something I'd like to do today.
Yes, of course. I think, you know, there's often, it's interesting, there's often individuals I'll run into that say, oh, I thought of that idea. And what, you know, very much happened here was there's a personal experience when my grandmother passed away and I experienced it as an adult. I witnessed my parents with the planning, the coordination, the communication. And I also, as an adult, had individuals that I worked with, colleagues, saying, what do I do? Where do I send something? How do I act? And it seemed extremely burdensome on the families that were planning and coordinating and having to, that were mourning, that should be focused on that aspect, that had to then worry about logistics or to tell people what to do or what not to do. And so this was one of those things that came about by necessity and need, where I recognized that people want help and need help. And whether you're the mourning family or whether you're the supporter or comforter, you seek out resources that are trusted and can be relied upon to help guide you properly. So that was what was the impetus for this.
So the putting of this together, the way you're describing it, one of the questions that leaps to mind is, wow, to put all this together from, you know, Aleph to whatever, the need for this, is this indicative in some way, this may be somewhat cynical, of the fact that the normative Jewish person in the United States of America just has no knowledge of what it means to be Jewish and thus needs this kind of a resource?
Well, I think there's a multitude of factors that are, you know, brought to bear here. You have those that are Jewish, whether they're, you know, transdenominational, whether they're not really affiliated or unaffiliated. There's that group where you have grandchildren and great-grandchildren or children that just want to make sure they do what their grandparents or their parents would have wanted. So they want to do the right thing, and they may or may not have access to those resources. But there's also a very large population and subset of individuals that are not Jewish, that are just part of those networks. So it's the technology evolution of how people are connected in today's world, the more trans-denominational, the more spread out everyone is living across the country and world, for that matter, where in historically, I think everyone lived very close in society. They didn't travel as much. So there were resources and family and support networks that were there. Whereas today, that's not as much the case, and it is different. Families are dispersed all over the globe. So some of this is to help with the connection there. There is certainly an aspect of it where there are individuals that just don't know about the traditions and customs that our parents and grandparents were familiar with by virtue of not having the exposure to organized religion as much.
Yeah. In any way, shape, or form, does this replace the role of the clergy or the funeral director?
In no way at all. This is 100% synergistic and intended to support the clergy and provide and or the funeral director. So what we do is many times at night, what will happen is individuals will be sitting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and they'll just want to figure out what to do, or they'll be thinking about the funeral or the Shiva or grieving. And the first thing they do is they go online. So this is really dedicated to helping to make certain that there's trusted, reliable educational information that can get people to a trusted funeral home should they be seeking one that knows and understands Jewish traditions and customs. So we work together with both independent and other funeral homes to provide the comprehensive content and educational resources as well as planning tools that otherwise they wouldn't have access to or would be very challenging for the funeral homes to provide to all of the comforters and supporters. So the funeral home focuses on the family and being able to provide the most authentic experience. We work with them in parallel to provide the supporters, the comforters, and the family with the other resources that the individuals seek for using the internet in digital form. Similarly, people might be from New Jersey that are visiting Miami and need to go somewhere. So finding a good synagogue that they could attend for a yard site, or it actually is very helpful for, I think, synagogues to be able to have new potential members down the road that join and attend the synagogue. So we've created this with the mindset of helping religious organizations and or other businesses, if you will, that are providing services for end of life to help make sure that the most comprehensive, complete, and authentic experience is provided during this time, and that it is as comprehensively supportive for the family and supporters as necessary, as available, or as possible.
Right, and the website Shiva, it's SHIVA.com, has links with funeral homes and resources, and so you really can almost one-stop shop there, so to speak.
It is in
planning. And go ahead.
Yes, no, that is correct. We are structured in such a way that if you are coming for education and information, the Learning Center has articles from a topical standpoint created in such a way that it's intuitive to navigate and find anything from how to select and where to find a funeral home to grief center selection, should you be seeking some support from a grief perspective, to the Yahrzeit and Kaddish Center, which is ways to honor and commemorate loved ones. So everything from a mourner perspective exists, or if you're a friend or family member or colleague and you're looking at visiting a Shiva, how to enter a home, things of that sort. People don't know today if they enter, an apartment building versus a gated community versus pulling up to a residence, are doors still left unlocked? Do you just enter, or do you ring the doorbell, or how do you enter the home? Many people just aren't familiar, so we provide this content to help support that avenue. And then, of course, the planning tools bring in and allow for the coordination, the planning, and the dissemination of information. So we work with the funeral homes, the synagogues, individuals, delis, bakeries, and caterers to help with the coordination, the collection of contributions, and streamlining so that there's less duplication in food items that are sent and or catered meals can be coordinated in one single place, and families can have a single resource by which they can have all of the names of those that want to provide a message to the family in one location.
The website has tremendous amounts of information on it. So I guess one of the questions that probably people will ask you, and let's ask it, do you have a staff of people who write and research all this, or do you do it all by yourself?
We're a team of individuals, of people. So we're a company with, you know, multiple people on our team, some of which are focused on the coordination of content, of making certain we're an advertisement-free platform. So we're focused on constantly reviewing, educating, updating content, enhancements of technology. So there's a team of us here. I serve as one of several. So I'm just one person, but we've got individuals that specialize in from a content standpoint. We have rabbis, clergy, and psychologists and psychiatrists that have reviewed, prepared, and synthesized the content, which has then been put onto the site. And so there's a number of different individuals that in particular that work on the content, the technology, to ensure we're constantly making updates. So we have multiple people that are updating the technology all the time. We also have a number of people on our team that specialize in catered meals. So from a coordination and delivery standpoint, we do same-day hand delivery of food in over 3,200 cities now nationwide.
Wow.
And we ship across the country.
So you mentioned that this is speaks to all denominations, even the people who aren't affiliated with a denomination. How do you handle in the grief and mourning rituals and customs and procedures, the differences between that left-wing, liberal, non-orthodox, non-halachic Jew and the very, very from Dati Orthodox Jew who is looking for guidance, perhaps, and there are differences in approaches, and there are differences in how one views the application of Jewish law. How do you handle that within the website?
So the approach we always have taken is we want to be there to support everyone, and everyone mourns differently. And when you add the religious and or observance component to it, it also adds a different or an additional dynamic to that as well. So what we've done is we've taken a non-mandate position. While the law or Jewish law might state one element in terms of Shiva means seven, we provide the definitional approach, and then we provide and allow for what people may encounter and what they may feel they want to do. So we use the word may rather than must. This is something that it leaves it open for interpretation to the individual, whether they're on the left or right side of the observances. And for us, it's important that people know and are aware of what the varying degrees that might be observed, because for them, if they're visiting a Shiva, they may see, you know, one thing if they go to the most observant family, whereas they might see a completely different experience should they go, you know, to the far, far left side. So the intent that we've sort of taken is we're going to provide you with an explanation and information that gives you exposure to all sides of the spectrum, and then allows you to sort of make the decision on where you stand rather than us telling you what you should do.
We're speaking with Michael Schimmel, the founder and CEO of Shiva.com, Shiva.com, a magnificently comprehensive website dealing with grief and loss and Shiva arrangements, planning, support, and as you just mentioned, catering. Michael, the site, as you outline, I think, on your homepage, is organized around four rubrics, a learning center, a planning center, the National Jewish Memorial Wall, and a yard site reminder. These are very, very comprehensive rubrics. Walk me through some of them. What's the Learning Center, and what's that involved?
So the Learning Center is structured content that is topically based in a similar fashion to a table of content. So it's been intentionally designed where a user can look at a site and see all of the varying topics. So what we've done is we've broken it up based on whether you're a mourner, whether you're a visitor to a shiva, a friend or comforter, a colleague. And so if you're unfamiliar with, or if you are looking to understand shiva, you can then look at anything in the understanding category, which will provide how do I enter, how do I act, what do I say, what should I wear. Those are some very common questions that are asked. So it's organized in a way that individuals can find information that is easy to digest and at the same time very easy to navigate from topic to topic. So if you're visiting a shiva, you might want to know how long should I stay, what might I see, what are the varying levels of observances, what is a shiva call, or how do I act during a shiva call, do I have to say goodbye, or should I say hello? And these are common questions that we've structured the Learning Center in such a way that individuals can find it. We then have a topic related to death and mourning, specifically in burial practices and planning of a funeral, the events that take place immediately following the funeral, and everything that leads up to the shiva itself and through it, but as well as before with finding and coordinating relating to the funeral through the first year of mourning.
Yeah, the Learning Center is organized. If you go to the website, when you pop on the page, it almost looks like a library. And the topics, everything from, as you pointed out, understanding shiva to how to sit shiva and what are the rubrics and laws and customs, the planning. There's some fascinating things that even people may not think of off the top about. You know, what about flowers, how to make a donation, planting the tree, because a lot of people think of that. And even the honor and commemorate section. Talk a little bit about that, because you even have there the why you place a stone on the grave, and also this rubric of naming a child and the power of the name. Could you just, what was the process of going into all these various subsections of the Learning Center? It's very, very comprehensive. And you can really almost get a sort of like Shiva 101 class on everything.
And that's, in many respects, we often, and that's where you had mentioned earlier on in the segment, whether we are in any way, what we do with and how we work with clergy. We are very intent on helping give a base level of information to individuals. And then when they want more, we encourage them to seek a member of clergy or visit a synagogue so that they can find out and learn more in depth about the topics that they have interest in. So each of these sections is designed in that way. The What to Bring or Send, which you brought up earlier on, provides a number of articles and sections relating to how and what to bring to a shiva, whether or not to bring food and or send a condolence basket, planting trees in Israel. We're a leading resource for planting trees in memory of, for honoring and commemorating loved ones. And we provide the reasoning and basis that people do this, the parallels in family trees, its connection to Israel, the reasoning for why flowers are generally not common within Judaism when during the mourning and shiva. There's those aspects of it. Then you get to the honoring and commemorating, and this is to intentionally provide what the calendar is. There's a Jewish Hebrew calendar, and then there's a Gregorian calendar, and there are distinguishing characteristics of each of them and different dates. We then go into detail relating to the yard site, the placing of a stone, the honoring and commemorating, and there's a yard site converter, Hebrew calendar date converter on there, where you can get a list of all of the upcoming yard sites for the next 10 years or 15 years for all of your family members and email them to others. So we've built this in such a way that you can know and understand what are the holidays, the major holidays, what you do and how you might want to act when you light a candle or when it's suggested to light a candle, what the purpose is of placing a stone, as you mentioned, and where this tradition has evolved from and the various reasons for them, which there's a number of clergy members that have provided their insights as to that. So there are there was a lot of thought process that went into how can we provide the most education surrounding topics that people are interested in but may not know what to do. So when it comes to honoring and commemorating, naming of a child, as you mentioned, placing a stone, lighting of candles, reciting Kaddish, these are things that people, you know, death and mourning and loss of life is something that is a taboo subject matter that people don't feel as comfortable engaging about. So we wanted to provide an approachable way to read about how someone can celebrate, remember, and commemorate loved ones within the context or constructs of Judaism. And that's what this was designed for, this section.
You have a checklist, don't you not? I mean, just somebody can download, print out, and here's the check, handy dandy, sort of like a checklist to go through, correct?
Correct. So within the Planning Center, we provide a comprehensive interactive checklist where it has a list of things that individuals may want to consider when preparing for a Shiva, whether it's having a water pitcher and paper towels to whether they want to cover mirrors or types of seating that they want to have. It runs the gamut from the pre-planning of, you know, contacting a funeral director, identifying and finding a funeral home, all the way through the coordination of meals for when returning following the cemetery in the burial, and having a meal for the family prepared and or waiting should it not be prepared for the family. So we've built out this in a way that there is a guide for all aspects.
One of the, I think, very interesting and often overlooked aspect of the whole process, which you include in the resources section, you have suggested readings, et cetera, but you also have a few suggestions for children's books. Talk to me about how that evolved, because that's really important. I was just dealing with a family recently about, you know, little kid, elementary school kids, and how to deal with some of this stuff. But you actually include a whole series of recommendations of children's books dealing with grief and loss and mourning, correct?
Correct. So we feel that we want to make sure we're as comprehensive as possible. And one of the, most challenging things to do is, aside from perhaps encountering the loss of a child or someone that is younger, but how do people often forget, what do I tell my children, or how do I explain to my child the loss of someone? So we want to make sure that we provide as much information and guidance so that children are included to the extent that it's appropriate. And, of course, parental discretion is always an important element of this. But we wanted to give activities, educational guidance and or passages and books that and the activities, I think, are critical that families and parents can provide to children to help them understand to the extent and degree that someone that is, you know, whether they're 3 or 4 years old or 6 or 7 or even up, you know, as you get into your teens, you mourn and or grieve differently and deal with loss very differently. So it's important that, you know, parents, when they're out there Googling, which is often the case, or when they're out there searching on the web for something, that they find books and information that help them get a sense of options that are available for them when speaking with their children about this topic. And so we really took some put a lot of effort into making sure this is there for families.
One of the other things, it's very timely, and clergy get asked this question all the time, is you also have a section on, I think under the Who Sits Shiva rubric, I think in the Learning Center, about interfaith couples and Jews by choice, people who've converted to Judaism, and the interfaith couple, or with the growth of that phenomenon within the Jewish community, this is no longer unusual. In fact, it may be more usual than not. Talk to me about how you approached this issue, which for some could still be very, very delicate.
Certainly. There are a number of topics that initially we were apprehensive to present because we want to be as sensitive and understanding and appropriate to everyone as possible. From an intellectual perspective, when engaging with certain individuals within the OU and of the Orthodox faith, they said to us, how can you not have information about tattoos, piercing, amputation, interfaith marriage and or conversions, while these topics are perhaps not agreed upon by all parties, they are topics that are relevant and worthy of discussion or at least interpretation. So our approach was to provide the basis by which those out there are operating under and the views of each perspective and allow for individuals, again, to seek that information and read it. But our intent was merely to, by not putting it in there, would be a disservice to those that are seeking the information. Whether or not they're in agreement with it is a different story, but it's there for the purpose of intellectually, it's a decision that everyone can make and or debate, but it is nonetheless something that is unavoidable and should be therefore, addressed.
So have you gotten any really pushback, real negative pushback? I mean, you just described some issues, but any really negative pushback by aspects of the community on why you shouldn't include this, you really leave this alone?
We have not. I have not heard of a single complaint. We receive occasionally we will receive an email which will get forwarded to my attention from a member of clergy that has gone through and done an audit of every piece of content we have and simply said, thank you. So, which is, we're open to any type of constructive criticisms and or pushback or, for that matter, suggestions on what to improve, because that's how we will continue to expand. Most of our topics evolve based on emails and other inquiries that are requesting information. So when we get the feedback is when our team has the ability to add new content to address the subjects that are needed and might not be there. So we have not faced anything other than compliments and the gratitude for addressing a subject matter that in a market that in an industry and a subject matter that really has not been until we came around properly, what's called, and completely addressed.
So and as we wind down this segment, Michael, and again, we're speaking with Michael Schimmel, the founder and CEO of the website Shiva.com. Other than Googling this and getting on the website, how else can one contact you or get in touch with you, et cetera?
Certainly. So we're partnered with a number of leading organizations, and we could, anything from the Jewish National Fund across the spectrum to other organizations, both affiliated and unaffiliated. So we work with a large number of funeral homes. We work with, and certainly any questions or inquiries can be viewed by visiting Shiva.com. We're out there and we're available and open to hear feedback. And we are here to assist with providing and sending sympathy and comfort gifts to the extent that anyone needs help. We ship items nationwide, and we have hand delivery available of appropriate Shiva platters for anyone that would need our assistance.
So, Michael, thank you very much. This is a very comprehensive website. Again, I recommend people checking it out, especially that Learning Center. Very, very interesting and fascinating approach to understanding Shiva, what it means, how to celebrate it, observe it, customs, ceremonies, rites, prayers, rituals, etc. So, Michael Schimmel, founder and CEO of Shiva.com, Shiva.com. Thank you very, very much. Continued good luck. Enjoy the weather in Miami. Believe me, we're jealous today. Take care.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back with our second guest, the author of a brand new book, Modern Loss, Rebecca Sofer, right after this brief break.
Turn your podcasting passion into profits. The book, The Business of Podcasting, describes the business side of podcasting, including how to become a professional podcaster. You'll learn about positioning your clients' expertise through podcasting, too, plus the best business models, how to find clients, and much more. Visit thebusinessofpodcasting.com.
Welcome back to our second segment on today's edition of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio and Podcast. Again, this is your host, Rabbi Richard Adress, and we welcome for our second segment, Rebecca Sofer, the co-author, along with Gabrielle Berkner, of Modern Loss, Candid Conversations About Grief, Beginner's Welcome. Rebecca, are you there?
I am. Thank you so much for having me today.
How are you?
Hi.
How are you? Hope everything's okay. Good.
Everything is great. I'm on my second cup of coffee. I'm not outside in this weather here in New York, so I can't really complain.
No, I know. You're having the same beautiful spring weather as we are in Philadelphia. this guy ahead of us was in Miami. I just said, look, before we went on air, I said, why don't you just go outside, hold your phone up, and just let some of the warmth come up here because we need it. Anyway, it's very, very nice, and I thank you for giving up of your time to talk about this very, very great new book, Modern Loss, subtitled Candid Conversations About Grief, Beginner's Welcome. The really, really spectacular illustrations by Peter Arkell and your co-author, Gabrielle Berkner, who couldn't be with us today. Let's get right to it. Rebecca, this book is available where and how?
Well, the book is available anywhere books are sold. Amazon, IndieBound, all your local indie bookstores, which are places very close to my heart. You can find it anywhere. It's even available on Kindle.
Right. So
it's an audio format.
It is okay. It's also an audio.
Mm-hmm,
very good.
Mm-hmm.
So in keeping with the season. I guess the easiest and first obvious question is, why is this book different than all other books dealing with loss and grief?
I like that. I need to learn how to sing that one in Hebrew. Different. I could not pull it off, trust me.
No, mine is tough.
I think that this book is different from all of the, I would say most other books on grief and loss because, you know, we are allowing ourselves to really approach the long arc of grief. This is not just for people who have lost somebody recently. There is a huge need for resources and literature about that. But, you know, loss is forever. It's a forever thing. It's across the long arc. You're going to live with loss the rest of your life, every single day, every single minute, in some ways. And so we wanted to address the long-term effects of it. How does it shape and mold parts of your life that you would never even have thought would be touched by the fact that you lost somebody meaningful in your life. So I think that, you know, it's different in the sense that we really are very broad with, in terms of the chronology of loss, but also our tone. You know, we really take a no-holds-barred approach to our tone. We are irreverent. I mean, I used to work for the Colbert Report. I deal with a lot of things through levity, because sometimes what else do you have? And, you know, we really don't shy away from people letting it all hang out. And I don't just mean like this book is a dumping ground. It's not. It's very well written. It's very, you know, literary. But there's a lot of humor in there. There's a
right,
lot of naughtiness. There's a lot of openness and rawness. And that's what we love, because that's really lost. Like, that's lost. That's the true experience.
There is, as you go through the book, there is a sense of humor. I think that's a fair statement that runs through the book, which is very healthy. I mean, as a clergy person, and you walk this walk yourself, you and Gabrielle is the genesis of the book. If you lose your sense of humor in many ways, you're in bigger trouble than we think. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that, you know, in my experience, I think that I've read here and there, I've had it suggested to me sometimes that, like, hey, like, why are you cracking a joke about death? And, you know, why, is that not disrespectful? And my answer is absolutely no. Like, we get asked all the time, when is it okay to laugh after you lose somebody? And my answer is whenever the heck you want, because loss does not have any rules. Loss does not, you know, it has its own timeline. It has its own guidelines. And, you know, what we adhere to in modern loss is we don't pass judgment on people. We let people grieve however the heck they want to, as long as they're not hurting themselves or someone else. Beyond that, there are no rules. And so with humor, you know, funny things happen. And I'm saying even in the wake of tragic loss, tragic, untimely, violent loss, there are still humorous things that are ludicrous that, you know, sometimes you just have to hold on to for your own sanity's sake.
Oh, no, every rabbi has had this situation where you have to deal with a very, very tragic funeral, a very tragic, you know, sudden, a lot of times a younger person, and the memories come through, let's say, at a funeral. People now are much more comfortable with relating humor, as if to not repress the reality, but to say this is a human being, and there were, you know, aspects of this life that were human, and we want to celebrate that humanness in light of the tragedy.
Of course. And, you know, like, human beings are fallible. That's what makes us human. And so I think that what we also do with modern loss is we allow people not to be so sanctimonious about how they navigate their grief and their memories and what they're processing. I think that there's a lot of pressure when you lose somebody to put their memory on a pedestal and only remember the good. But, you know, that's not life. Like, you know that as well as I do. People are complicated. Relationships are complicated. And when people die, it's normally not all tied up with a, you know, a perfect little bow, you know, all of their relationships with everybody left walking the face of earth. It's just not the way. It would be so great if we got to say loving goodbyes and just, you know, tie up all the loose ends by the end of our life. But not of all of us are so lucky. I hope I'm not lucky one day. My mom was killed in a car accident 45 minutes after I gave her a hug goodbye. My dad had a heart attack and died when he was traveling outside the country a few years later. I didn't get to say goodbye to either one of them. And so, of course, there are things left unsaid. And so that is loss. And so what we do help people do with Modern Loss, which was a website first that we launched 4 years ago, a very thriving website that has now published hundreds and hundreds of personal essays, you know, that are narrowly focused on the aspects of the lost experiences. We let people explore those unresolved feelings, the, you know, or the nebulous aspects of relationships, which are like, you know, sometimes you might not have had the perfect relationship with someone. There's such a thing as ambiguous grief. There is such a thing as, you know, being a little relieved that somebody is gone. If it was a contentious relationship that might have done you emotional or physical damage. And we invite people to share that and to really exhale and not feel like they have to spend all of their energy putting up this facade of, I lost this perfect person, because that is exhausting.
Hey, I think one of the themes that really emanate from the book, as you read through the various essays and personal reflections, which is the strength of the book in many ways, is this idea that you come away with that there is no paradigm, that grief and loss are very personal and everybody does it differently. And there's no, in many ways, there's no right or wrong. You can't draw up, this is the way to grieve. Because from what, as you just said, the circumstances around each death may be so circumspect or so unique and individual. There's anticipatory grief with people who linger with Alzheimer's for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And in essence, their grieving process may begin years before the actual physical death. But it's a
exactly.
real process. It's a real process. You have a section in the book which I think would surprise some people, on TV and movies. Walk us through it. Why out of all the thing, you know, again, going back to a little bit of reality check, you talk about TV and movie issues. How did that get into the book, and what's the purpose of it?
Can you tell me specifically which piece? Because I'm not quite familiar with the book.
Oh no, it's also on the website, on the website.
Oh yeah, on our site, of course. Yeah, I don't know that we actually touch it in the book. Right? We definitely have, because you know the whole modern tag in modern loss is not just like, okay, grief in the age of technology. It's really like inviting people into this conversation of, are you craving being part of a conversation that is open, that is all inviting, that carries no judgment, that is not specifically tied to religion, that is geared toward people who are really living in this kind of more realistic era of, chances are you're not surrounded by all your relatives right now. Chances are if you're younger, you are working really hard on building up your life and trying to afford a mortgage and, you know, in this like, you know, administration and trying to, you know, get a partner and buy a house, you know, get a dog and everything. And so chances are, you know, you're not like, you're the nucleus of your life is not a religious organization or, you know, all of your friends and family, because that's just like not the way we're living these days, especially when we're younger, when we're transient, we're hopping jobs more. Even our you know, our coworkers are changing more frequently because we're changing jobs more frequently. So the whole modernness of it is not like, oh, this is just for younger people. It's really about, do you feel like the conversation, the topic of loss and grief is so taboo that you're sick of it being a stigma? And if so, join us, because we'll let it all hang out and we're there for you. And so I think that when we talk about TV and movies, we've actually done a lot of pieces on, you know, movies and TV shows, not only shows, but also very specific episodes that really get grief right. And when we say right, I know you say like there's no right or wrong way to grieve. Yeah, there's like literally no right or way, wrong way to grieve. However, there are accurate portrayals of the many different ways to grieve. And we really give thumbs up to those episodes because we think that they are helping to eradicate the stigma associated with grief. And we want more people to know about them.
So, you know, to allude to this on the media, I just want to ask you your opinion of the use of social media to vent and to discuss and to talk about one's own grief journey, grief and loss, you know, posting things on Facebook, this, that, and the other thing. This is a new world. And obviously, what's your take on it? Do you think this is another modern form of the way people will express this sense of loss and grief?
Sorry, could you repeat that question one more time? I just want to make sure I got it right.
I'm seeing more and more people in the light of loss and grief turn to social media, posting on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera, sharing you know, sometimes very intimate issues, but
yeah,
basically laying their souls out there for in online and saying, I'm dealing with this. Is this just
right.
another new form of the use of technology?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is just, you know, like it or not, technology is here to stay. And also, like it or not, even much more so than we were at 5 years ago, I think that our online persona are really just an extension of our in-person, you know, manifestation. I think that, you know, maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, online, you had an avatar. You had like a fake name. You were on AOL or, you know, whatever chat room you were in, and you were using an alternate persona because mm-hmm. that's just what you did. These days, you know, chances are your Twitter name is your name. You know, I'm at Rebecca Sofer on Twitter. On Facebook, I'm facebook.com/Rebecca Sofer. Same on Instagram. It's really easy to find me, and you are seeing my comments. Like, that is me, you know, commenting. And so I think that what is happening in technology is that, yeah, like people are just taking their grief and putting it online. And I think that that has pros and cons. I think it has pros because it really forces the world at large to bear witness to somebody's grief, to bear witness to the fact that someone important is missing from this person's life. And also, in a very low-touch way, it enables that person to reach out to a wider community when they're having, like, trigger days or trigger moments, like death anniversaries, holidays, or just, like, a really crappy Tuesday night where they're just not mm-hmm. feeling great. And they want people to know that, and they're putting up a picture or they're saying a memory. And that's really great because it really can alert other people who chances are care about that person to some extent, that, hey, they're having a tough moment. I need to be aware of that because we are all so busy in our own lives and we all have the best intentions, but you know, it's hard. I mean, I have two little kids. I have a baby and a 4-year-old. I have a lot of friends who I'm trying to be there for, but you get wrapped up in your own life, in your own mishigas that like you just have no choice but to, you know, forget about some really important things. And this enables people to remind people in the moment, like, hey, I'm having a moment. Are you there for me or not? Now, the danger is that it's really easy, and it feels amazing when you have all these people like liking and hearting your comments and quickly, you know, saying, thinking of you, like sending hugs. That's really great. But that does not last very long. I feel like it's just the equivalent of like, you know, I don't know, like drinking, you know, taking a really amazing shot of like bourbon or something. And it doesn't last a long time. What we are hoping that technology serves to do is basically a trigger for more meaningful action. So we're hoping that when you're on the other side of that post, that you're not just liking or commenting, but you're also maybe like, I don't know, in dare I say, inviting that person out for a drink, going over, like seeing what they need, or just offering something specific that is a tangible thing that you can do for them besides just a like. And so, you know, I think that we just haven't really figured out how to fully incorporate technology into our lives in the most meaningful of ways, especially during the most profound transitions of our lives. But we're getting there. Like we're moving slowly toward there because we also have no choice. We just have no choice. Technology is here to stay.
One of the interesting segments of the book, which I found very, very, very real and very powerful in many ways, is this section on triggers. You actually have an essay by WNBA star Shanique Holdsclaw.
Oh yeah. She's great.
On these types of triggers, and you just alluded to it just before, and we've just gone through Seders and Passover, and there are people who, you know, would sat down Friday night and Saturday night at a Seder, and that person who is always there is no longer there. And what triggers, I remember, you know, even with my dad or my mom, I would be driving, and it would be a song that would come on, and would immediately trigger a certain memory. Could you just talk a little bit why you chose to include that, which is, you know, people don't always talk about that, but it's very, very real, this idea of the triggers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like to me the most, that's to me the most obvious aspect of loss, which is, and maybe I wasn't aware of it before I lost my own parents and went through it myself, but that, you know, the first chapter of our book is called Collateral Damage. But wait, there's more, because I think that people sometimes think, or they want to think, because it's a whole lot easier to think that it works this way. It's a whole lot more comfortable for us, right? If we just think, oh, like someone died, someone's grieving. Those first 30 days are the worst. And then that first year is hard. And then it gets better. And then it gets incrementally better. And that's the way it goes. We both know that's literally not the way it goes. Loss has, like, there's different permutations and combinations to the different timelines that people experience with loss. For me, year two was exponentially worse than year one. After my mom died, it was terrible. It was awful. It was excruciating. And, you know, it provided plenty of triggers. And so even down the line, my mom died 10 years ago. When we talk about triggers, we're talking about the obvious days that I just mentioned, like an anniversary of a death, a birthday, first date, you know, a graduation day, like what it's when we drive ourselves nuts with the woulda, coulda, shouldas. It's when we drive ourselves nuts with the if onlys, the what ifs. And I think that that is a dangerous game to play with ourselves. And I would be a hypocrite if I said I didn't still play that game with myself. Even years down the line, losing my parents, I always imagine, like, what if my mom were here to be able to hold her grandchildren? And what if they were able to get to know her and my dad? And they're never, ever, ever going. It's just never going to happen. And that's what I do. Like, it's like just human nature to, like, bring yourself to that mental state. But for me, what saves me is a very, you know, unsexy but functional mantra, which is, it is what it is. And I always bring myself back to that, which is like, like, what if? Yeah, but it's not. And it is what it is. And so, you know, these triggers, it doesn't mean that moments don't pop up and sneak attack me that can really take me down and really just crash into me like a big wave. And you just alluded to Passover. Is, for me personally, Passover is a very, very bittersweet time these days. You know, I just went to two Seders. Neither one was at a home that was a relative of mine, because that doesn't really exist anymore. My mom was the one. She was the glue. My mom and my grandma were the glue of the family. My grandma died 6 months before my mom died. I lost both of them within 6 months. And we were all best friends. And they were the ones who hosted Rosh Hashanah and Passover and breakfast and everything, because I was the one who grew up in the big house outside Philadelphia. And, like, we had the room, and my mom had the hostessing gene and could just do it without breaking a sweat and not laugh at the, you know, not sweat the small stuff. And I don't have that anymore. When she died, that was gone. And no one really picked it up and ran with it. And I, who lived in New York in a one-bedroom apartment, it felt like I was going to be the one doing it. And it felt like my family was going to come up to Philadelphia to see me and if I were hosting. So even years down the line, I still do not go to family theaters because no one is doing them. And that is so bittersweet for me. I mean, I'm bittersweet because it's sweet because I now have two little kids. I have two little boys who I never thought I would have in the deepest depths of my early days of grief. I really thought it was all over for me at the ripe old age of 30. And I know that sounds really dramatic, but until you go through something like it yourself, you won't know. And I really thought that, you know, my hopes and dreams were dashed because I was just feeling so lost and so bleak. And here I am years down the line, and I have recreated this amazing parent-child bond that I had so desperately been missing. But it's just, instead of looking back, it's looking forward to the next generation. And I value it so much. And I think that in some ways, I'm so much more present as a parent mentally and emotionally with them than I might have been had I not lost my parents. Because I'm highly aware that this is all very ephemeral. Like, it could go away at any second, and I want them to know as much about me, and I want to know as much about them, and I want to just have these amazing experiences with them. So that's what makes the holidays very sweet, because I get to share the holidays with them. But, you know, it just is what it is, that we're literally like wandering Jews during this time. And it would be wrong for me not to admit that I sit at these seders sometimes and think, God, what a happy family. Like, I feel like, you know, just like a guest and not like family, even though they're trying to make me feel like family.
No, 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 yes. No, it is. And that's, you know, at the risk of sounding like a rabbi, that's why the wilderness experience, which is so key to the Passover Haggadah, is the major metaphor for the Jewish community. Rebecca, we have, before we start running out of time, we have just a couple minutes left. One of the things you talk about, intimacy, you actually have a chapter in the book about that. Could you just walk us through about why you included this concept of intimacy in a book on loss and grief?
Yeah, because I think that, you know, loss affects everything. I mean, this book is not, we both wrote extensively for it, but we also solicited pieces from 40 contributors. And some of them are people you've heard of, some you haven't, but it doesn't even matter because the, you know, loss is the great leveler. And it doesn't matter if you're a celebrity or you're like, you know, on food stamps, you know, we all experience, this is like one of the universal things that we wanted to show that through the book. I think intimacy is a huge issue that we are just cracking the surface of with modern loss. I mean, we're talking about intimacy as it relates to, you know, romantic relationships. What happens not just when you lose a spouse or a partner, but rather what happens when you lose a child? Like, what can happen to your romantic relationship for good and for bad, because it goes both ways? How can it strengthen or weaken the bonds that we have with others? How can it affect the fundamentals of our very deep friendships when somebody just doesn't show up for us because they don't know how to? What happens to our sex lives? I mean, yeah, we go there because guess what? Like, it's really nice to just say the word intimacy, but chances are if you lost someone who you were, you know, in a romantic relationship with, you were probably still having sex with them. What is it like to not be able to do that? What is it like to miss a human touch so, so intensely after that person vanishes from the face of the earth? And these are the things that we really try and explore as much as possible as you can within one chapter.
The book, again, is Modern Loss, Candid Conversations About Grief, Beginner's Welcome. The co-authors, Rebecca Sofer and Gabrielle Berkner. There's some beautiful illustrations here by Peter Arkel. And again, as Rebecca pointed out, this book is available to all the major bookstores, The Change, The Indies, and on the great God Amazon, et cetera, and Kindle and audiobooks, et cetera. The website, Rebecca, is www.what?
It's modernloss.com.
modernloss.com, and again,
easy to find, and we have a very active Facebook page. You know, we're Facebook at Modern Loss. We have even a closed group on Facebook that you can request joining. We're on Twitter. We're on all the platforms. We're very easy to find.
So we have about a minute left in this segment before we have to say wrap it up. You wrote this book, you and Gabrielle, your own personal experiences. It's a leveling book. It's very human. To that person right now who may be listening to this either live or on the podcast, what and who's experiencing this grief and loss, what's that one piece of advice that you can give them?
Oh, man. Well, I feel like I could give a lot of advice these days, not as a clinician, but rather as just someone who's been moving through it for years. And I would say that the most important piece of advice I would give, maybe twofold. One, it's not your job to make others feel comfortable talking about your loss. It's not your job. People they put the onus on the griever, on the one who's dealing with loss, to make them feel comfortable talking about the topic. And it's just not your job. The other, you know, and I think that we want to make people feel comfortable because we are also so uncomfortable dealing with our own loss. It's such new territory and we're all feeling uncomfortable. And I just think it's so unfair when people, you know, add to the problem. They don't help. The other thing that I think I would say is be kind to yourself. Cut yourself a break. I mean, I can't even tell you how many Google searches I did that were kind of like, how many days in a row is it okay to eat mac and cheese? Or what is wrong with me? Still struggling after 14 months. I just was struggling. And it only took me putting myself through the mental, emotional,
Rebecca,
physical rigmarole.
We're out of time. But I want to thank you very
okay.
much to all of you. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Steve Lubetkin at Lubetkin Media for our production. See you next time on Jewish Sacred Aging Radio and podcast.
Thank you for having me.